Mr. Dunreal 3. During this time in 41-42, whilst you were doing the training in Britain, were there women on the air sites?
Yes, but not on our sites. In fact, well before that, Churchill's daughter, Sarah Churchill, she was an officer with a mixed unit at Hyde Park in London, 4-5 battery, and they had gradually started mixing units, the women on the instruments instead of men. And as I briefly said, I met my wife at Blandford. She had just joined the army, and she was down there for training. With the, obviously, they formed a battery and they were training down there. From there, they went to a firing camp and then went to form a mixed regiment with men on the guns and women on the. And she served all the way through the war. That's the only time I saw her, was the month we were there until after the war.
So you didn't work with women?
No, we never did. It had appeal to us, obviously. We never got right into it.
Can you tell me about your voyage to the Middle East?
Yes. It was the Pacific liner Duchess of York. Churchill, you mentioned previously how popular he was. Had ordered that they would carry twice the complement of crews because of shortage, obviously. So it was rather crowded. Started off, we laid for 3 days at Liverpool after all the secrecy of the overseas and all that. Then we left and we copped a nice North Atlantic gale, which brought the usual sickness to most people. I was lucky, I wasn't affected, but, it was vile between decks. Very crowded, as I say. but after about a week, we got into warmer climes. Went way out. The convoy used to go way out into the Atlantic to avoid Fokker Wolves, the big six engine Fokker Wolves they had. Came back into Sierra Leone, just stayed there, no one went ashore. Down to Cape Town, where we had 3 days, and you were allowed ashore. I only got 1 day ashore. because I've been detailed off to go on. They had 240mm mounted on at Beaufort, and they detailed, obviously, from our regiment, chaps for the gun crews of them. And I was one of the unlucky ones, so I only got 1 day ashore in Cape Town. Not that there was any remote possibility of a German aircraft turning up in Cape Town, but that was the army for you. And from then up to Port Chufet.
So you arrived in Egypt September 42, just before Alamein.
Yes, before Alamein. Obviously there's a acclimatization period.
So you didn't take part in Alamein yourself?
No, not Alamein, no. Whether the guns didn't get through, but out of the regiment of three batteries, only one battery was equipped with 3.7s. We took over these 3-inch, 20 underweight, 1915 pattern from the Egyptian army. Even then, in the troop, one section had screw breeches, and the other section had sliding vertical breeches. That's what we went to war with up in the desert. The first deployment we had was, and this is why we didn't go in the line at Alamein, because in Alexandra Harbour there was quite a flotilla of French warships, which when France surrendered, they were the sort of Eastern Mediterranean flotilla of the French Navy, and they'd been caught in Alexandra Harbour. And they were neutral, but they were allowed to keep their AKAT weapon breaches intact, but their surface, the battleship Lorraine was there, which I think was something like 15-inch guns she had, but they'd been taken off and taken ashore and kept in the dockyard, but they were allowed to keep their 4.7 stuff and all like that. And we moved into Alexandra Docks, and we moved on to the coal pan, where they used to, a lot of the corvettes at that time were still coal burning vessels, wooden coal vessels. And there was this jetty where they used to come up, lay in and load up with coal. So we pulled in there, and we kind of painted the guns sand colour for the desert. Took us about a day to do it. One of these corvettes pulled in, and the old Grab come down to pick up the coal and lowered it down the chute, and we had speckled black guns within about 10 minutes. There was one troop was at the land side of the jetty, and there was a troop right out on the far end. I think like about 200-yard jetty this was. And we'd been there about a week, naturally thinking we were there for the defence of Alexandra Harbour. And the troop commander, he's quite a character, Captain Senior, paraded all the gun layers, the number ones, and said that we're going to do some marching drill. We all thought he'd had a touch of the sun. So he said, "No, when I give you to the right salute," he said, "you will be looking at your prospective target." So anyway, go along this jetty, the troop sergeant marching us, you know, to the right salute, and we go through this drill of bringing up the arm, the salute, turning your head and eyes to the right. And we couldn't see anything different than what we'd already seen. So anyway, we marched back, and he said, "Now, you saw your target," and everyone's still looking puzzled, and he said, "It was the French fleet there." So he said, "Tonight we're moving up to where you got the order to salute, and we're deploying the guns and lining up on the French fleet, and we're going to give them an ultimatum. Come on to our side or be sunk." We knew the calibre of their 4.7 guns against our puny 3-inch, and realised that to us it was a giggle. And we weren't told until the next day, 11 o'clock, that the forces were landing in Algeria. The Allied forces were landing in Algeria. But 2 minutes before the deadline, 11 o'clock, there was this terrific explosion further up inside the dockyard, and we all looked round, and where the explosion come, there's a couple of bodies flying up in the air. And the Greeks had been loading torpedoes into a submarine, and somehow or other one of these torpedoes had gone off and killed the six men that were loading the torpedo in. Momentarily, it left us with a dirty taste in our mouth, thinking that the French had opened up, you know. Following that...
So that was November 42?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
North Africa landing.
Yeah, North Africa landing. From there, we moved out of the docks and went to Sidi Bish, a staging camp. We were there about 4 days, and then took off for the Blue.
For the Western Desert.
Western Desert. These 3-inch guns, they, at the rear of the gun platform, the trailing rear, was a an ammunition limber, metal obviously, and seats for four men to sit on, two facing the way you were going, and two facing the rear, with the barrel in between you. because they visualised that we would possibly be attacked by tanks at some time or other, they brought in this order that we would four sit on this limber. The two men facing the rear, all they had for their feet were two chains hanging down with a metal bar going across, and their feet on this metal bar. Be about half inch wrought iron handles to hang on to. Now, this is all very well if you're travelling along the nice country roads of England, but the Western Desert's not all sand. Even the coast road going up it was bombed and pottled all over it. But once you took to the open countryside, you had the dust from the vehicle coming up. Just, it was completely covered in sand. You did your best to put a handkerchief or something around here, and we used to use the anti-gas goggles to try it. But it was atrocious. And you'd drop for probably 10 hours travelling like this, you know. You go over a bump and the chains would give, the rail would come up. So we landed up at Tobruk with our first actual deployment on an air drone.
Were there any German air raids on Tobruk?
Yes, on Tobruk. Again, it was mostly not during the day. We didn't. It was a night raid. And all they could have was really barrage, prefixed barrage shooting. Just a case of us traversing the gun range and firing, say, until you were told to stop firing, you know. From there, we moved up to the other side of Benghazi, and it was a case of, at this stage, to try and remember everywhere, you know. A lot of it was on forward air strips, defending forward air strips, or AGRAs, as we called them, Advanced Group Royal Artillery, the gun line, 25-pounders, 4-5s, 5-5s, and we'd deploy adjacent to them to defend them against air attack.
What does AGRA stand for? Advanced?
Advanced Group Royal Artillery.
How far from the retreating German enemy were you?
When we were at Tobruk, he'd fallen back to Elegalia, the Elegalia line. We moved up within, say, about 5 miles of the gun line there at that time at Elegalia.
When the German Air Force raided, did they do much damage?
No. The blessing of it was from then on, we really had, from the time that we went into the desert anyway, we had complete air superiority, which was gratifying. The first time we ever saw was Mitchell's doing a carpet bombing, you know, and it was, to us it was gratifying to see them getting it instead of us. it was only sporadic hit and run tactics with him, whatever we come up against. In the Marath, we deployed when we deployed in the minefield, actually, in the Marath, one of those things, the minefield wasn't chartered. That, I would say, that you talk of fear, I really felt fear there. I've been, amongst others, detailed off of the anti-mine squad, whereby we'd practice this in England. They knew about the possibilities of it anyway. So many men out of each troop were a mine squad that would be taken forward to clear the area of mines. You've been given basic training on how to lift a mine. and in this case, the troop commander had done a recce that night, and with his 15 underweight truck at the mine, and he walked back to stop us coming into the area until daylight, and we moved into the area, and then one of the trucks was pulling away, having detached from the gun, unloaded the ammunition, it pulled away and struck a mine. So they called the mine squad together to clear the area for the vehicles to go into to park, the vehicle park. And the officer in charge, he'd been in the desert long before we had, just he had to been posted to us, hell of a nice chap, he had glasses. Two South African engineers sergeants had come up and shown us the type of mine that it was an Italian strip mine. They're about 2 foot in length and buried very shallowly in the ground. All you could see was where the lid pressed down on the detonator and laid it to shoot in. And they had to keep an area clear where the detonator was to allow this to function. And that's all you could see to detect them. And I was walking along with him, this officer Hughes, and he said to me, "Have you seen these black beetles?" I said, "Yes, sir, they're the only beetle of Egypt, scarabs." Still carrying on talking. And I saw this indentation, and I reached over and stopped him treading onto it. It was a mine. And picked it up and disarmed it. And he carried on while I'm doing it. And he hadn't gone about, 5 yards, and woof. I could see clothing, paper going up in the air, you know. And everything settled, and I went over, and it looked just like his trunk to me. But I could hear a moan, and I shouted down for a stretcher, and the chap who was our first aid, Waller, he always petrified of any action, you know, and yet he'd come up through that minefield like a tearaway carrying the stretcher. So it just shows you that fear can be overcome, doesn't it? In the meantime, he's moaning, and he sensed there was someone there, and said, "Someone there," and I said, "Yes," you know. And he'd lost his two legs, his testicles had gone. But the amazing thing about it was he'd lived. He evacuated, and he went back to South Africa. They evacuated him, and the chap lived. It was amazing. But as I say, I really felt fear when this, because I've got it in my hands, and he'd trod on one, you know. So. in the same place, we had the unique experience of engaging some Messerschmitts as they came over. This is in the daylight, and as we were engaging them, German 88s opened up and engaged them as well. And so we stopped and they carried on firing, like, you know. So.
This was in the Marath line?
In the Marath line, yeah. We were supporting the as I say, it was an Agra, but we were right where the Black Watch. The Black Watch attacked that night, which was stirring to hear the pipes knowing that they were going in action at the same time as them poor buggers, you know. And then it was, from then on, it was airfields, Agras, right the way up through till the campaign finished. We were place called Pontoufaz when the campaign actually finished, and within a matter of days we went back to Tripoli.
Did you see anything of the German POWs?
Oh yes, yeah, we saw them, you know, at, because we were up in the gun line, I mean, just the same as the field artillery, you know, and you'd see them coming back as prisoners.
What impression did they create?
First of all, the Africa Corps, they were really impressed. They were arrogant, almost arrogant, you know, but it was pride. It wasn't, although it wasn't a false pride anyway. I mean, they had every reason to be. And we, of course, we knew that we were newcomers to the desert anyway, whereas we were part of the 8th Army. We didn't by any means consider ourselves the elite of Wavell's time. One thing that we, Monty then, of course, came into popularity, and the tales that were being spread around that he'd taken over a dispirited army. We never witnessed that. Quite the reverse. The troops that we come in contact with, the infantry as we come in contact with them, they weren't dispirited in any way.
Did you meet Montgomery?
I've seen him. I haven't actually met him, but I've seen him. In fact, at Wadi Akrit, we defended his HQ. We worked in to defend his HQ. And again, we had a hit-and-run daylight raid there. And we engaged. they came in low. Six Messerschmitts. They came in low. They must have thought they were still over their own territory. And the 40mm, the Bofors, really made mincemeat of them. With us, with the 3-inch... I mentioned about gun control before. You get a plane coming in, if it's so close that the instruments can't lay onto it and keep up with the rate of change of it. So in that case, the order is given gun control, where the number one takes over and orders Travis right, elevate, elevate, judges the distance himself, orders a fuse to be set, fuse six, is normally happen below fuse six. You would have to engage by gun control anyway, so the normal thing, fuse six was always ordered. And fire is just guesswork, you know. But in this case, one of the guns, no one knows which, of course, just blew the tail end straight off of one of these Messerschmitts. But after this 10 minutes of inferno, the next thing, a sergeant came down, a staff sergeant, with instructions for us to move further away from Monty's actual caravan.
So, what happened to you after the Tunisian campaign?
We came back to Tripoli. In the move up from Alagalia, we'd gone round the left up with the Kiwis. When Tripoli fell, and occupied the airport at Tripoli. After the campaign, we came back to Tripoli. The regiment came together, for the first time since we'd left Carberton, we did a shoot eight to sea with these three against some barrels eight at sea. It's supposed to be a practice gun, but the instructor of the gunnery that organised it took it as a net picnic, the same as we did. They knew that, you know. And from then we moved back as a regiment to Egypt, to Kassassin, landed in these 3-inch and took over 3-7s from another unit, mobile 3-7s, re-equipped to our own clothing and all that. Had leave, we got to leave. I had 4 days in Alexandria. And from then we moved back to Tripoli and carried out combined operations, practice and landings, loading vehicles, unloading, whipped in a couple of exercises on landing craft infantry just to familiarise us with it. Not that they visualised us going ashore as infantry in any way, just to familiarise us with the vessels, like, you know. And then we waterproofed the vehicles, loaded them on to an LST, and we were placed into pens, as they called them, whereby you were laid no contact with anyone ashore, sort of, in this, just barbed wire compounds. For about 3 days there, boarded the LSTs ourselves, and in Tripoli, and moved up to Misurata. Convoy gathered together in Misurata. In the meantime, they'd invaded Sicily. We knew what we were about. We knew that we were going into Europe somewhere or other, you know. And left Berserker. Oh, that first night there, Jerry picked the convoy up, and I'd now they'd give each gun a Bren gun. Each gun detachment had a Bren gun for defence of it, either grain targets or low-flying aircraft anyway. And I'd become a Bren gunner on the gun, if it, you know, still on the gun, but should anything happen, I would man the Bren gun. And just before the campaign finished, we'd also got a twin mounting for Bren guns. Motley mounting, they called it. It was a bucket seat you sat in, the guns were on an arm, and you were looking through the between the two of them, under rain magazines. They'd, on all these hit and runways up through the desert, they'd never managed to engage. Something always went wrong and got a stoppage or something or other. And at the end of the campaign, or just before the end of the campaign, the troop commander had got hold of me and said, you know, something's going wrong with the Bren gun sections, and put me on this Motley mounting. There was a bombardier in